The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.
Welcome back. We're in conversation with Dr. Jay Keystone, travel medicine expert and medical director of Medisys Travel Health Clinics in Toronto. He's professor of medicine at the University of Toronto and past president of the International Society of Travel Medicine. Okay, so let's take a scenario now. Someone's coming into your clinic and they're traveling. Let's say it's very common travel. They're going to, in this case, either Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, or they're going to the Pacific coast in Mexico.
Right.
What is your approach for them? What do you do first? How do you explain why things have to be done to have them be well prepared for that travel?
Well, the first thing, you clearly have to take a history as to where their exact itinerary is, because if, for example, you're going to major urban centers like Puerto Plata and staying there in the Dominican Republic or the capital, you don't need animal aerials. But once you're out into rural areas, and that includes resort areas, and I'm just using Dominican Republic as an example,
sure.
It could be Mexico, the first thing is, if you're going to an endemic area, we then explain to the patient you're at risk for malaria, how it's transmitted, and then the use of insect precautions, which in the only thing people should be using is DEET, Avon Skin So Soft, Citronella. It does work for a total of about an hour max, mm-hmm. and therefore DEET is the only thing one should be using. And between dusk and dawn for malaria, and early morning, because of the possibility of dengue, which is a virus transmitted by mosquito, we tell people the only time you really don't need insect protection is in the middle of the day. Okay, so
sure.
Insect protection is dealt with. I don't tell people to wear long sleeves, long trousers, or trousers unless necessary, mostly because it's not practical in these areas. It's ridiculous. So we talk about that, and then we talk about the antimalarials. The drug of choice for that area of the Caribbean is chloroquine, two tablets once a week, starting a week before you go, once a week while you're there, and for 4 weeks after. It's a very safe, effective drug. The drug's been around for 40, 50 years. And the bottom line, if you take an appropriate antimalarial in this area of the world, there we can provide or guarantee 100% protection pretty well. But the only reason to use another drug, and that would be the drug Malarone, is that some people don't want to take a drug for 4 weeks after they leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of Malarone, safe and effective, like chloroquine, is that you can start it one day before, daily while you're there, and for 3 days after you leave.
Right.
Even though the company says 7 days, I don't believe you need seven. Three is enough.
Okay.
So those are the choice of drugs that I would use in that area of the world.
Are there any compliance issues that you've encountered with medication use?
Oh, yes. Hello. people, how can anybody take anything three times a day or anytime,
right.
more than once a day?
Right.
Yeah, the compliance problems are when you have to take a medication for a prolonged period, like 4 weeks after departure, or like once a week, do you remember to take it? I find people find it easier to take a medication once a day for a short trip than to take it once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you take your choice. And the beauty of chloroquine, though, it's very inexpensive.
Right.
Very inexpensive. The problem with Malarone, the main side effect is bankruptcy. It is an expensive drug. But for short trips, it's really a no-brainer because it's more expensive, but not hugely.
I love that. The bankruptcy was great. are there any myths that you hear from patients with respect to prevention of malaria? You know, you mentioned what they have to do with the DEET and stuff.
Yeah.
Do they come in or have the survey look at what they think helps to prevent things?
The survey didn't look at that all that much, but they did believe one of the major misconceptions is that people believe that the side effects of the medication, malaria medication, are worse than the disease itself. Well, if you compare that you're preventing a potentially fatal infection versus maybe some stomach upset and headache, I would say that's a serious misconception. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't think that bug spray works. Well, it does for most, but not for everybody. I think, you know, we have a group, and this doesn't really apply as much to the Caribbean, but we have a whole group of new Canadians, for example, returning to their homelands in Africa, India, and they think they're immune, and therefore they don't have to take drugs, anti-malaria pills. And the problem is that the longer they're out of a malaria endemic area, their immunity begins to wane. And once it's waned sufficiently, if they get a large dose or inoculum of malaria parasites, they can die. And that would be, you know, that has been one of the problems, because right. if you look at who gets malaria in Canada and the U.S., the number one group are new Canadians returning home to visit friends and relatives.
I believe it's a similar story, for example, for hepatitis A and hepatitis B and typhoid, that they may think that they're immune from the areas that they're coming from where it's endemic, and they yep. don't get the vaccine, and they go there, and then they get the infection.
Well, a recent study in Quebec showed that 86% of the typhoid cases seen in Quebec were seen in VFRs, that is, new Canadians, mostly returning to South Asia, mm-hmm. which I would say is the typhoid capital of the world. They have a huge amount of typhoid there.
So aside from the malaria, yep. if someone going to Dominican or Mexico, there's still other things that they would likely be screened for, and potential vaccines to be recommended
you bet.
When they travel.
You bet. I mean, we always say, personally, I believe that every traveler should have hepatitis A and B vaccine. I don't think you need typhoid unless you're going for a long period to those areas, so mm-hmm. it's not a top vaccine. You know there's a vaccine against traveler's diarrhea called
yes.
Dukoral.
Mm-hmm.
It does provide some additional protection, and my approach to that is I recommend it for people who want or need additional extra protection, not necessarily every traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And then really important is that every traveler should be carrying an antibiotic for self-treatment of traveler's diarrhea. I mean, you could say, well, if you don't drink the water and you don't eat the salads, you'll be fine. Except we know that the data in the literature show that 97% of travelers make a food and beverage error within 72 hours of arrival. 97%. The bottom line is nobody does what you want them to do because they're going to an all-inclusive resort. They've already paid for their food.
Right.
And we're going to tell them, like, don't eat the salads, don't eat at, you know, buffets. I'm sorry, it doesn't work. So every traveler should be carrying an antibiotic for self-treatment of traveler's diarrhea. And then the other two key issues are, if you're going alone and you're thinking about having sex with someone else, a new partner, you better have it be protected, and make sure when you're drinking that you stay in control, because that's where the problems begin,
mm-hmm.
when you're out of control. And then the final point, probably less applies to the Caribbean. It certainly applies to Mexico and the rest of the world. The number one killer of travelers is not infection. Fewer than 1% of travelers die from infection. 40% die in motor vehicle accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And the rule then is, one, you don't ride on a motorcycle. And number two, you never travel by road in rural areas after dark. No night buses, no night taxis. The roads are bad, the drivers are worse, and the vehicles are poorly maintained.
Well, Dr. Keystone, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time, and a very enjoyable and entertaining time it has been.
Well, great.
Talking about malaria and also travel medicine issues that people should know about. And I think the information that's been provided is excellent. And is there a website or where our listeners can go to get more information when they prepare to travel, when they should be seeking advice?
Well, I think most people should try to get to a travel clinic at least 4 to 6 weeks before they go, which many don't. You can go to Google Health Canada,
mm-hmm.
Travel Medicine. Unfortunately, they have good, they have better monographs than they have good information.
Right.
However, they do provide a list of all the travel clinics across the country. And then the other place to look would be the CDC website, Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, www.cdc.gov. And I think the advantage of the CDC site is that you get information according to destination,
right?
Whereas the Health Canada site, if you want to read about traveler's diarrhea, if you want to read about meningitis or whatever, malaria, excellent monographs, but it's, you can't do it individually by country.
Dr. Keystone, once again, thank you very much.
Barry, you're very welcome. And you can call me Jay. Only my parents used to call me Dr. Keystone, and only in front of other people.
That's great, Jay. All right. Dr. Jay Keystone is Medical Director of Medicis Travel Health Clinic in Toronto, Professor of Medicine at the University of Toronto, and past president of the International Society of Travel Medicine. Coming up, some news briefs, and you can start calling in at 1-800-580-2372. We have a special guest in studio, and we'll get into that as well. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House.